If you recall, I had asked you to take a look at the Rimigash. This is already on the page I gave it earlier this week. And the Rimigash, which is quoted here on page 1, it's the third source before the end of the page, Shita Mekubetzes. If you read the Rimigash carefully, you'll come to the conclusion that in order to generate a chiyuv of Egla Rufa, how many cities do you have within this Yosheves Bein Aharon, within this enclave, as we call it?
Yeah. 10.
Oh, so you're quoting the Tosfos Rid, but take a look at the Rimigash. You know, until now we thought you might have 10 cities, like the 10 stores in the Mishnah of Teish Chanuyos, but then we see something phenomenal, a revolution of sorts in the Rimigash. Let's read it inside. The Rimigash says, "V'yosheves bein aharon pirush she'ein shon derech layoros the alma." There's no way that anyone could come from outside of this yosheves bein aharon. So now we have rov and karov, and we're going to do the medida and decide and determine which is the closest city. And obviously, there's no city that has a rov, because then the rov would undermine the status of karov. El lizu ha'ir ha'cheres bilvat.
There's only two cities?
There are only two cities. Why does the Rimigash insist that there are only two cities? Why can't the Rimigash imagine a scenario, the way the Tosfos Rid presents it, that there are many cities inside the harem, but they all have the same population, and therefore the rov is neutralized, and then we go basakara.
More realistic?
I don't know if it's more realistic to assume that there are only two cities. And it sounds like you're halachically limiting it to two cities. Now, in addition to this, the Tosfos Rid himself quotes a Yesha Piresh, and that's, you'll see, he doesn't identify him as the Rimigash, but I have a pretty strong feeling that it's the Rimigash. And this you'll see in paragraph number 5 on your page. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, number 5 on your page. He says, again, the Tosfos Rid is going to reject this pshat. He says, "Imhayu eser ayoros, v'zu krova mikulon, v'ein bi'achas mitesha gdola mimenu, mikomakom yoser b'nei odem yesh bi'osan atesha, mimash yesh b'zu akrova, v'nitla b'echad shepirish, u'ba mehem, v'lo tovi akrova, Egla, Mibnei Rov, Shemakrish Sakharov, the Ainzer Pirish Nach." What does the Tosfos Rid reject in the Yesha Pirish? Well, what did the Yesha Pirish learn in order to construct a Rov against the Karov?
There's 9 other cities.
And what? Look at the language, right? She Yesh Pi Osan Atesha, Yosef Bnei Adam.
There's more people inside of those than the Krova one.
Right. So the Yesha Pirish is willing to do what in calculating the Rov?
Counting all the cities.
He's adding all the cities together. He's integrating the population of all the cities. The Tosfos Rid rejects that. So we have a double machlokas here between.
Assume that you can do that, though.
Logically, if you want to know where the Rotzeach came from, if you've got, let's say, 10 cities, correct?
Okay.
And the Krova has 100,000. But each one of the other 10 cities, even though they don't have the advantage of Krova, they each have 11,000. So now you have 110,000 people against 100,000 people. Is it likely that the Rotzeach came from the Krova?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it has more than each one individually.
And that's a Tosfos Rid. But if you didn't have the Tosfos Rid, wouldn't you say statistically that there's more of a chance that it came from the total population of all the cities than from this one city that has less of a population?
How many times one city it came from?
It's more like we're saying that odds are that it didn't come from this city. As in, we're not saying what city it came from. We're not saying what city it came from, but we're saying odds are it didn't come from this one because
right.
There's more people altogether in the other one.
So I think the machlokus between
like the
Rishonim here is what are we asking? What question is on the table? And there are two ways of defining the question. The Rimigash says, what's the likelihood that the Rotzeach came out of the Ir HaKrova? Says the Rimigash, there's only a likelihood that it came, that the Rotzeach came from the Ir HaKrova.
If there's only one other city.
If there's only one other city. If there are many other cities, then probably came from a different city. And not only that, even if you have one other city, if that one other city has a greater population, and how much more so if you would integrate the population of many different cities, then the likelihood that the Rotzeach came out of this one city that's Krova is a very low percentage. But the Tosfos Rid, I think, is arguing on both counts because he's asking a different question. His question is not what's the likelihood that the Rotzeach came out of the Ir HaKrova, but rather what's he doing? How many candidates are there a priori? Right? We have this Yoshev Esvein Aharon. According to Tosfos Rid, you have many, many cities, right?
According to him, you only have one other city. So there's two cities.
No, according to the Rimi Gash, there's only one other city. Right? Because otherwise you have a rove of cities. But the Tosfos Rid rejects the Rimi Gash. Why? What's he asking?
The cities, in essence, aren't really in the start with each other because each city is asked to...
Each city's on its own, on her own, right? But what question are you asking about each city?
They're not rove.
What are you looking for when each city comes forward to present its individual candidacy for the job? You know, for the Egla Rufa job.
You're not looking for the outside of what city it came from. You're asking each city itself if it came from you.
Correct. Do you, as a representative of the city, each city has its own representative. Do you have a claim that the Rotzeach came from you? And what we're trying to do now is set up a medida. So what we want to do is, we want to, first of all, isolate all cities in the enclave, Yoshev Esbein Aharon, that have a Bezdin. Because again, if it's a city without a Bezdin, it's a no-go. You know, you can't be a candidate. And now once we've established our list of cities, each of which has what? Has a Beit Din. Now we can ask each city to present its credentials, its likelihood for bringing the Egla Rufa. If one particular city has the Rove, then we assume that the Rotzeach came from that city. And that will exclude all the other cities. The only problem is that the Tosfos Rid happens to hold that you need another condition. It's not enough that you've proven that the likelihood is that the Rotzeach came from your city. What else do you need? You have to be the Krova. Because again, the Tosfos Rid, if you recall, has an absolute requirement that you must be the Ir Krova. Now what I'd like to study with you is the Ramban. If you'll take a look, the Ramban on page 2 has a girsa, a fascinating girsa, that v'su l'rabbi zera. In other words, according to this girsa, the Gemara's question is a question on Rabbi Zera. Klomar l'rabbi zera di omar, please underline these words, kol karov adiv, afagav delo mukach. Interesting. According to this shita, this girsa, Rabbi Zera holds that every single karov, even a karov delo mukach, beats out a rov. You know, Tosfos doesn't recognize such a possibility. Dumya de'ir hakrov el acholol. And again, what you need here is any sort of karov, you know, it qualifies to trump a rov. Similar to the case of karov in Egla Rufa. Because what kind of karov is Egla Rufa? According to the understanding of the Ika Nusach de Garsi, it's a kurva de lo muchach. Interesting. Tosfos assumes that, you know, when we're dealing with Egla Rufa, we're dealing with a kurva de muchach. But this girsa is assuming that it's a kurva de lo muchach. So that's a fascinating point here, because when we summarize the sugya of Rov and Karov, we now have three shitas. We have Rabbi Chanina at one extreme, that Rov always beats out Karov, even Kurva de Muchach. We have the other extreme, is Rav Zera, according to this Girsa, that Karov always beats out Rov, even Kurva de Lo Muchach. And then we have the middle Shita, the compromise Shita, which according to Tosfos is Rav Zera's Shita, that Karov beats out Rov, but only if it's a Kurva de Muchach. And now, take a look at the Yesh Mefarshim at the end of the Ramban. The Eish Mefarshim says, "V'e deleker denafish mine vade dahavi." Excuse me, dahai hava. If there's only one shovach in the neighborhood, and there's no other shovach that can contest and contend for the ownership of this nipal, so e amet yishlem the ikar denafish mine. Had there been another shovach that has more birds than the one that's karov, what would we do in such a case?
It goes to the
motzi. It goes to the motzi? Why? So you remember Tosa's answer to that question?
Because the korva, the ruba kind of is nafkia, the...
Right, oh, you're in the Ramban already.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to backtrack for a second, okay. If you don't mind. So, Ari, what was the Tosas assuming? If you have a shovel that has more birds, why are you allowed to pocket it for yourself?
Because of majority of people are...
No, because who owns this coop that has the rove in it? You remember Tosas, he gave two possibilities?
Non-Jews, yeah.
Right, either it's non-Jews or... Well, Hefker. And the Yesh Mepharshim and the Ramban says something else. No, the reason you could pocket is for a whole different reason. You want to read it inside? Just that one line. Ruba. Stop. That's enough. That's a revolution of sorts. What does he say here?
That each one beats out the other in that case.
Unbelievable. Each one cancels the other. I mean, it reminds you of the sugya trey utrey. When you have two adim contradicting two adim, they nullify each other and we're back to zero. So according to Ramban, anybody who has a claim to this nipal, he's going to be contradicted. He's going to be knocked out of the box. If his claim is predicated on what? On Karov, then we have a Rove against him. And if he's claiming Rove, because he has more birds in his coop than anyone else, we're going to set up Karov against him. And at the end of the day, who's left with a Raya? Who has any proof and evidence to support his claim? Nobody.
Well, the fire.
What'd he say?
Because of the birds, the fire.
No, I'm just saying, again, Reuven owns the Shovach and it's Korov. Shimon owns a Shovach and it's Rov. Who found the bird? Levi, right? So at the end of the day, Reuven and Shimon will knock their heads against each other, knock each other out of the box, and then Levi is going to say, oh, I'm claiming it for myself. It's unbelievable. You know, we've always seen a boxing match between Rove and Karov, and either Karov wins out or Rove wins out, and there are different variations, but we've never seen that neither Rove nor Karov are reliable when there's a situation where Rove contradicts Karov.
Not necessarily, but I've got a roof on Tosa Swim, we see that. Bringing that roof of the corn.
No, but that's for a different reason. That's not because Rove and Karov, that's because the Rove tells me that it didn't come from the Karov. Right. And the Rove doesn't have the advantage and the prerequisite of a Karov. Here he's saying something totally different.
Yeah.
He's not introducing any prerequisites here, you know, for ownership. It either belongs to Reuven or to Shimon. And the answer is no, it belongs to Levi because Reuven's claim is countered and Shimon's claim is countered and they're both thrown out. I mean, there are a number of chidushim here in this statement of the Eish Mefarsh and the Ramban. I mean, not the least of which is that you can be tofe something, even though a priori you know that it belongs to one or somebody else, and you can be tofe it for yourself. And then you can turn to each contestant and say, well, what proof do you have to rip it out of my hands? I possess it, I'm tofe. So you can say, well, you have a karov. Yeah, but there's a contradiction against the karov. I don't know. This is a pella. Because normally Rabbo said, what would you say in a case where two people have an equal claim, except that there's a contradiction between their various rayas? Yachloku. For example, in Trey Utrey, I would say Yachloku. if nobody is muchzak on it. Okay, if somebody's muchzak on it, that's a different case.
Well, here we have someone, the lady is.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that this is pretty radical because the suffix existed even before he picked it up. It either belongs to Reuven or Shimon. He picks it up and now we can't get it out of his hands? I mean, to say Yachloku? That's very strange. We'll come back to this point later about Tfisa Lachar Shaleda Sasofik in the case of Mechtal Mechtal. But be that as it may, one thing you see from this Ramban, and this is a phenomenal chiddush of the Ramban, and that is that Rov is not just a birur, but Rov is some sort of a requirement, it's like two Edim, which, if it's contradicted, it loses its entire status. In other words, either this biur works, or for some contradictory reason, it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, it's totally meaningless. I would have said, look, there's a rov that tells you came from the rov. There's a karv that tells you came from the karv. I don't know which beats out what, which. I'm left with a suffix, but I know it either came from the rov or the karv.
In other words, rov and karv aren't, neither one is either than the other.
Neither of them is what?
Neither one is stronger than the other one. Each one is an equal level of vira.
No, but I'm saying even more than that. Again, I agree with the Ramban. Let's take the Eish Mepharshim, accept it, we embrace that neither one is better than the other one. The other one, no one can win out. But still, at the end of the day, where am I left if I don't know which is stronger, which is better, which is more reliable, rov or karv? What am I left with? A suffix, no? Says Ramban, no. I'm left with zero. And therefore I can be tofis. I'm left without any claim. It's not that Reuven claims Karov to support his claim, and Shimon claims Rov to support his claim.
I mean as if it was never about anything in the first place.
I mean, what happened over here? You know, his definition of the way Rov and Karov operate is that Rov and Karov only operate in the halachic framework if and when they're uncontradicted, uncontested. I'll give you an example. A ma'ad over dome, it's like eid echad against eid echad. That's called an eid mukhash. Once the eid is considered eid mukhash, he doesn't register at all on the rector scale. He's not there. It's command lesser dome. The hakhasha, according to the Rabban, is chal on the karov and on the rov, respectively, and therefore both the karov as a karov mukhash through the contradiction of the rov. And the rov is a rov mukhash through the contradiction of what? Of the karov. Is none of them are valid. They're sort of illegal evidence that you can't bring into a court of law. Leave out the rov, leave out the karov. The hakhasha undermines, it's mafkia, the shame rov. The hakhasha is mafkia, the shame karov. I mean, I would have said, I don't need to establish rov and karov. You know, like, for example, if you want citizenship in a country, so you have to register, you know, as a citizen. You go through a long process, and finally, you get the right papers. You know, the decision is handed down. Does Rove have to be registered? Does the Halach have to recognize Rove in order to inject in it a status of a Rove? There's no such thing as a Chal Shem Rove. Rove is a reality. Rove is out there. I don't need to recognize the rov. Obviously, I need to know about the rov, otherwise I can't argue in my favor. But if my shovach has more birds than yours does, that's a reality. You can't deny that reality. And you have to support your claim, Karov. Says Rabban, no, we're going to take rov and we're going to define it as a factor, as a power that has authoritative halachic significance if and when the halacha recognizes it. There's got to be a process of recognition. It's not natural evidence. For example, the Gemara wants to know if this baby belongs to the first wife or the second wife, right? Is it a ben shiva, you know, born after 7 months prematurely to the first, or after 9 months to the second? The Gemara says, no, most births are after a full 9 months, right? So, you know, you don't need to edify that and elevate it to a status of a rov. I mean, that's the way teva, that's the way nature works. Here the Ramban says, no, we're not working in a natural universe, it's not automatic, it's got to be halachically adjudicated, it's got to be given legal status, and if it's mukhash, then there's no legal status. Then we have the Rimi Gash and the Ramban at the end of your page, and these Rishonim are taking a crossing swords against Rashi. They're really taking a very aggressive attack against Rashi. Rashi assumes when the Gemara finally makes the breakthrough of Midada, and I apologize, we haven't gone through the Gemara yet thoroughly inside, but just in general, what does Rashi introduce here in order to explain the breakthrough of Midada? Does anybody remember that Rashi?
Right, he says that
correct. In other words, what we have to do is we have to change our perception of the bird and its nature. It's no longer a medada bird, it's not a mafriach bird. And Rashi actually uses very dramatic language here. He talks about Torah's medada and Torah's mafriach. The Rimi Gash and the Ramban are not really so impressed with this. Let's look at the Rimi Gash. The Rimi Gash says, Hacha mayas kinem b'medada, diomar Rav Ukva bar Chama kol medada ine medada yosu mechamishim ama v'keva dahay nipol chutz lechamishim ama dahay shovach koi v'leka shovach the kariv minei b'tok chamishim ama havadai inish hu dahav ma'isile me'alma. Somebody brought this bird from the world. Not from the shovach. The source, the origin of this bird is not the shovach, but rather somewhere out in the world. Who's bringing the shovach from outside?
A traveler.
And what did he do? He dropped it. Umiyayish, he gives the Pope. He has no chance of identifying that it's his bird. There's no sima. Mishum hachi, hareyu shel motzo. So again, we've excluded the Baal HaShovach because we're dealing with a Medada. There's no way that a Medada could have extended itself beyond Chamishim Amah. That's a Shir Chachom. But what we get into now is the possibility, therefore, that it came from some other fellow. But again, this is a fellow who traveled, brought a Medada, and dropped it. Who is he?
I thought we said they don't drop them.
Right. So that's probably why Rashi is avoiding this shot of the Rimi Gash. Because the Rimi Gash is really, but again, the Rimi Gash is only in a default position. Now, it's up front a priori, I would say that nobody drops a bird. You know, those birds are worth money. But in this case, where did the bird come from? It didn't come from the coop because it's a medada. A medada doesn't get to 50 amma plus. So where did it come from? It came from somewhere in the world. How did it get there? So here we're going to have to use the travel. Rashi's not excited about it.
So when they say it's a traveler, that means it doesn't fly?
It doesn't fly. Rashi learns, no. Yeah. I'm sorry. It doesn't fly. Right. Rashi's going to say it flies, and the Rimi Gash, and we'll see it in the Ramban, in the name of Rabbeinu Chananel, they maintain it doesn't fly. If it doesn't fly, how did it get here? So now we're in a really difficult position, because how did it get here? It didn't just fly out of the heavens. So the Rimi Gash is going to offer one answer, the Rabbeinu Chananel are different. The Rimi Gash is going to offer the possibility that how did it get here? It was dropped by an over derech. The Ramban, on the other hand, quotes the Rabbeinu Chananel. First, he vehemently opposes Rashi's pshat that we're no longer learning a medada. He says, I don't understand. The Gemara never mentions that it's a different bird. You know, just because we find it 51 amma outside of the range of the shovach, therefore it's not a medada. I mean, if the Mishnah is talking about a medada, and certainly the ratio of the Mishnah is talking about a medada, then we should assume it's a medada. And not only that, according to Rashi, once we introduce a Torah's Mafriach, Rashi offers a different answer. How did this bird get here? Was it dropped by a traveler? If in Rashi's frame of reference, we're dealing with after 51, we're dealing with the Torah's Mafriach, where did it get here?
It flew
from out there in the wild blue yonder. So Tosus doesn't understand it. He says, That's called nasal basar ruba, meaning ruba di alma. He says t'mini. Look at the Ramban on the third line. The Allah reading the nasal basar ruba di alma, but kula hayu kimta de masnisa. In this whole section of the Gemara, when the Gemara is analyzing our mission of Napal, the Gemara doesn't whisper a word about ruba di alma. And Tosus, if you recall, worked overtime to explain why there was no ruba di alma because of shloshim ris. But the Ramban is certainly on Tosus' page that there is no Ruba the Alma here in the Gemara. V'yo, demashin masnisa kulu b'medada, for less by Torah's mafriach. So let's leave out mafriach.
But isn't it having it falling in from a person? Isn't that essence Ruba the Alma at all? You're assuming that it came from the row of people that passed by outside of the Chamishim Amah? And so instead of saying it's Ruba the Alma of the birds in the world, it's a Ruba the Alma of the passerbys that carried birds on them. What was the difference? Either both of them...
Is that also Ruba di Alma? So let's see Rabbeinu Chananel, and we'll come back to your question. It said, Rabbeinu Chananel, Zal pirish dechutz lechamishim amo harei ushal motzo mishum damrinan inish havi darile v'nafal minei v'yayish dekeva demidade lo motzi osi v'atzmo. It couldn't have gotten here by itself under its own powers. I will tol chamishim lo talinan le Elabidi Asu Midanafshayu Vlobo Vidrachin Vloshia Loshia. Fine. And then he reconciles this answer with the Ika de Nusach that the Ramban had quoted earlier, you saw on the top of the page. Rabbosai, let's look at Tosfos about Yerushalayim. Tosfos says, "B'yosheves bein aharim b'imtomar amai itzrich kra b'sof perik meruba dan Yerushalayim mevia egla rufa." Who can explain Tosfos's question? What bothers him from the Gemara in Meruba?
If we already set the what's it called, the criteria for Emirufa as Ben Aharim, right? So the Gemara says that therefore, right, Yerushalayim is on the hill, but that doesn't make it. We still would never, we never would have had to say that Yerushalayim should bring a Garufa because there's so much, there's such a rove that comes in out of that city.
And yet the Gemara in Baba Kama
still does.
No one, you want to finish it up? The Gemara needs a pasuk to derive that Yerushalayim is excluded from Egla Ruf. What about Ruba the Alma? So Noam, how does Tosfos resolve this? I mean, there is a Ruba the Alma. I mean, people are coming for the Ole Regel. They're coming to bring their Dovim and Dovis. They're coming to sell their wares. Yerushalayim is a great metropolis of trade. So what is Tosfos' answer?
There's a difference. Our one that
Rukhmina
brought was a different type of...
What does he mean? Lavo rak b'nei Yerushalayim. What does he mean by that? Right, in other words, there were areas where the influx of people didn't get to those residential areas. They were separate. Inami v'imei chizkiyo. Shekol Yisrael hayusham v'lo yubayim l'schora. So Tosfos presents a vision of Yerushalayim at the time of chizkiyo and Navi, where Kol Yisrael were in Yerushalayim. So the Rebbe Chanan asks, Tema, v'chi v'imei chizkiyo lo hayashum yishuv b'chol eretz Yisrael, rak Yerushalayim levad, the entire population of Israel converged on Yerushalayim. V'yod, and I'll prove to you that they were living at the time of Chizkiyo and Melech all over Eretz Yisrael. This is very sharp. What Gemara does he quote?
Sanhedrin.
Right, but I mean, what do you see from the Gemara in Sanhedrin? Well, what is the subject of the Gemara in Sanhedrin?
They search on Eretz Yisrael.
Right, does anybody know what the Gemara's agenda is in Sanhedrin? What the Gemara's trying to prove?
That the people, that they could be trusted to eat places?
No, no, no. That Chizkiyo HaMelech was meant to be Mashiach.
Really?
He was supposed to be Mashiach. The Dar of Chizkiyo HaMelech was like no other generation that came before. Right. Because the Gemara says that if you tested a child anywhere from Dan to Beersheba on two of Itara, the child was a bucky. From Dan to Beersheba. You know, somebody, I think Shimon Peres, who's now the president of Israel, once walked into an eighth grade class in Israel, and he asked the kids, how far is it from Dan to Beersheba? So one of the kids stands up, he says, you mean Dan and Beersheba places? We thought they were husband and wife, like Sodom and Amorah. Anyway, the Rashba says that I have a different answer to Tosfos' question. When is it, historically, that Yerushalayim doesn't have an influx of people? Again, people coming to the Beit HaMikdash, right? That's the gravitational pull. Well, they're bringing Karbon Aliyah LeRegel. Yeah, there's no Beit HaMikdash. So in the period of time before Beit HaMikdash, maybe Yerushalayim could become a candidate for Egla Rufa, Chas V'Shalom, right? So on that we need a pasuk. What does the Reb Shlomo, the Chedesh Shlomo say? What would be another scenario in which you need a pasuk?
If you find it in the city itself.
And therefore, but what about the Ruba the Alma that Tosfos is yelling about?
It's fine. It's there.
Correct. Then we don't apply Ruba the Alma. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah, raglo achas b'toch hamishim amo, v'raglo achas chutz mihamishim amo mahu. The bird is wobbling around and it lands on the 50 amah line with 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Ma'u v'alda afku'ua l'Rabbi Yirmiyah mibei midrash, they threw him out. Says Rabbeinu Gershom at the very end. He says, Mishum dematrid lehu b'she'elos she'ein bohem mamish. What does ain bohem mamish mean? Mamish is Rashi Tevis for what?
Really?
Oh,
Rashi Tevis.
Oh, no, I was just joking. You didn't know that the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to always end every shmu, every sicha with mamish, v'meir v'meinah? Mamish? You never knew that? Mamish is Rosh Hashanah, Menachem, Mendel, Schneerz. Okay. Forget it. Just wasting all my good jokes on you. So what does Rabbi Yehuda Gershon say? This is Ein Bohem Mamish. You know, you're coming to the Beis Medrash. Now take a look at the Gemara Menachos, which you'll see on page 2. Boy mine Plimo. Do you remember Plimo? He came into Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Mi sheyesh lo shnei roshim, bi eiz v'en meniach tefillin. Guy has two heads. What's that called? Siamese twins, right?
Oh, they just split a Siamese twin, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
They did successfully? That's very impossible.
The sternum. I was 3 years old.
That's pretty amazing.
The article.
That's
See, I don't understand Plimo, because which one of the two heads would be the head that you put on tefillin? I don't know.
That doesn't make sense.
Why not both?
Yeah, I would put them on both just to be sure. You know, cover your bases, cover your heads. Omalei okum goli, either going to golus, and Rebbe kicked them out. Okabel alecha shamta. Anybody know what a shamta is? It's a nidui. Why was Rebbe so upset with him?
Because he was making a mockery of this.
There's no such thing as a baby with two heads. There ain't no such thing. Adahachi, until they put him into shamta, there was a couple of minutes. Asahu gavra, somebody comes into the base medrash. Omalei says to Rebbe, Isyalidli nukadis beitrei rashi. My wife gave birth to Slimy's twins. What do we see from that?
Hey, it's possible.
Kama being in Lamesa Lakoin, apparently it was her firstborn, and there were two boys. So she wants to know how much he has to give to the Kayin. What are the two options?
Five
or what, 10? Maybe each one needs pigeon, it's each one is a bakar. Right? Asahu Saba Tani Lechaiv Lithin Lo Yud Slaim. So one of the elders from the previous generations came in and he paskins that you need to give 10 slaim for each head. Each head is bakar. You notice how many beings are there?
Two.
And Tosus quotes a medrash, fascinating medrash, that at the time of Shlomo HaMelech, there was actually a case of a woman who gave birth to a child with two heads, and they asked the question whether he has rights to inherit two separate portions in the Yerusha, or he only gets one portion. Meaning what? What's the fundamental issue about two pairs of tefillin, about 10 slayim?
Are they considered as two people or one?
Excellent. Two people or one. So if you look at the sheet of Mekubetzes, he brings the rest of the medrash. You know, Shlomo HaMelech was a pretty wise fellow, right? So what did he do? When they brought him the baby with two heads, it says in the medrash, Shlomo
covered one's head with a cloth and tried scolding the other to say they were real.
Excellent. And he wanted to see if the other head would yell and scream because the hot water was placed on the forehead on the left head, and would the right head scream out? In any event, the Rishonim go to town to try to understand why Rabbi Yirmiyah asked this very theoretical question, which doesn't seem to have any reality to it, because how is it possible to measure it out exactly in such a way that one leg is in, one leg is out? And this has to do with a sugya called the Efshel Litzamtzem. So again, Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom are one side of the fence, because they think this is a purely theoretical question, lo hayv, lo niver, it never could be, and therefore they evicted Rabbi Yirmiyah. Yeah, I'll tell you the honest truth. If I was there, I would have gotten up with Rabbi Yirmiyah and walked out. I would have been with Rabbi Yirmiyah. I'm on his team. Because I think you could ask theoretical questions. Because that's what Torah is. Torah is theoretical. It doesn't have to be that every question is a practical issue. People mistakenly think...
We see by Sora Mara also. The Gemara says that Sora Mara can never
right.
Have a rule.
So, certainly you. I don't know how to reconcile the Chachamim of our Sugya and Rebbe and the Sugya Plimo with what I understand philosophically to be very essential about the nature of Torah. And I'm with Rabbi Yirmiyah here. But in any event, what was Rav Yirmiyah thinking? Just in terms of Pilpulo Shel Torah. Didn't he realize that in such a case it would be 50-50? It's Mechzal Mechza. We'd have to split it. That's a dinner moment. Amuto B'Safe Yachloku. So the Yad Ramah goes very extreme. He says that's why they threw him out at Mishpach. Not because he was asking a theoretical question. My Kami Boile, what kind of stupid question are you asking? Havile Moment Amuto B'Safe B'Cholkim. And there's a footnote out here which is fascinating. It says, even though I found it, so if you want to prove to me that this bird belongs to you, Mr. Shovach, because one leg is on the inside, well, go prove it, because I'm holding on to the lost item. He says, Lo Amrina. this tfisa that he's holding on to is not valid. Why? The chashiva tfisa li achar shenolad hasofik. So that's the Yad Ramah. The Ritva says in defending Tosfos and Rabbeinu Tam that they threw him out not for asking a theoretical question or not for his ignorance, not knowing that it would be achlokel, but rather because he was mezalzel. Whoa, that's a heavy accusation against Rabbi Yirmiyah. But look, we got to figure out why they, you know what I mean? They expelled him from class. You don't expel anyone just for that. He was mezalzel b'shi'urei derabban. The Chassam Sofer has a whole shot here, but did you look at the part Yosef at the bottom of page 1? He has a fascinating approach to Mechtzel. Mechtzel, Rabbeinu Tam, in arguing with Rashi, you know, he waves the you know, the banner of Mechtzel, Mechtzel, because Mechtzel, Mechtzel clearly indicates that there could be such an exact measurement. Go ahead.
I mean, they're not Jewish, but there's a current case of Siamese twin in down in Texas, or somewhere in one of the southern states, and it's two girls, and they can't. Neither one can feel the other side of the body. They can only feel their own side. They're trying to study how they have such an inborn sense of like of
balance.
A balance. I know they can run. They do. They can even play ball, and so they can drive and everything. And they have two spines.
And they're still attached.
They're attached. They're inseparable. They share one heart, one pair of lungs.
Oh,
but they have two. Each one has their own nervous system. And what's it called?
But why do you think Shlomo Melech dropped hot?
Right,
so I was
saying exactly because it doesn't. So these in this case, the other person would not have screamed out. They don't feel. They can't feel the other. Like the one person has to.
So how many people
one,
would they be?
Like, what? So
they'd
be
with
two,
how long?
Yeah, so they'd be two people.
In other words, what Shlomo Melech was trying to impress us is that if you're all one, then you feel each other's pain. If in the nervous system, there's one nervous system, and we both share the same pain reaction, then we're one. That's the godless of Shlomo. But you know what? I just wanted to finish up with this Parat Yosef. He says that we're misinterpreting Mechtzel Mechtzel. He says, Me'a Mishnah of Mechtzel Mechtzel, Ein lahakshos kushas hatosus, shenizkeke ladun bi'ofen shel tzimtum, that we should have to force, based on the Mishnah of Mechtzel Mechtzel, a symptom that we can be precise. That's not the only way of going. That's not the only way, the only game in town to interpret that Mishnah. Mishum she'efshol lefarish kavonas haMishnah b'din Mechtzel Mechtzel b'ofen shasofeku lanu. What do you think he means by the word lanu? It
means that like it's almost like nearly an eye. We can't.
Right, we can't tell. It's not a suffix in objective terms that we took out the measuring rod and it came exactly mechtzel mechtzel equidistant between the two shovchos. He says, Lanu, l'shovchol shomi haya nipol Yosef Karv. We don't know whether it was closer to him or to him. For example, what happens if the bird moved, you know, since he found it or something along that line? Or simply we can't measure it, yefshol tzamtzen. He says, in such a case, v'lo nimtza v'diyuk ba'ofim mitzumtam, then we're going to invoke the rule of Yachloku, Maman Abutu Masafik. We don't know if it's closer to him or closer to him. But that has nothing to do with their argument, the Chacham's objection against Rabbi Yirmiyah, because in Rabbi Yirmiyah's case, in order to establish that this bird has one foot in and one foot out, he obviously was assuming that you could precisely measure it, Bidiyuk, Ba'ofim Mitzumtum, and that's something that they didn't tolerate. And he invokes the Mishnah Gittin. The Mishnah Gittin speaks about a woman who's receiving a get from her husband. If the Eidim testify that the get was delivered to her, or a Karavla, or at least it went closer to her than to him, she's Megureshed. If it's Karavlo, if it didn't go past the middle line, closer to her, then there's no Yad here. She doesn't have a Yad in the get, she's Eidim Megureshed. Then the Mishnah says, Mechtzel Mechtzel, Megureshed V'Eidim Megureshed. So that's to do with the laws of Yibum and so forth. What does that mean? What does it mean, Mechtzel Mechtzel? Did they actually take out a measuring rod and they found that the get, you know, with its length and its width was exactly, precisely on the middle line? He says there also the pshat is that the suffix is lana. We don't know whether it's closer to her or to him. And therefore she's considered Megureshes V'Eina Megureshes. And last but not least, we have Chassam Sofer, and he wants to explain in a very similar way that the suffix of Rabbi Yirmiyah is where they did a medida, and now they realized that at the end of the Medida, they found that one regel was in, one regel was out. Now, according to the Shir Chacham, that's an impossibility, because the bird is a Medade. So therefore, we have to assume that there was some mistake that was made in the measuring process. And we don't know where the mistake was. Right? Was the mistake this way or that way? Meaning, if the mistake was b'medida senu, in our mida, in the way that we measured it, then we should possibly assume that the bird is still within 50 amma, and if it belongs to the Baal Shova. But there's another possibility, and Rabbi Yirmiyah investigated that possibility as well. Nitla hatos b'mesha shi'arnu shehu midada v'harei hi mafriach. Maybe our mistake is that we're looking at this bird, and we're assuming that this bird is a medada, and since we know it can't cross the 50 amma line, then we have to assume that we made a mistake and it really never did cross the 50 amma line, and therefore the mistake was in our mida, in our medida senu. But the other possibility is to say that we made a mistake not in our mida, but this is really a poreach. We made a mistake by evaluating the bird and assuming it was a medada when it's really a poreach. So in effect, each tzad leads you to a different conclusion. If you go with the conclusion that our measurement must have been mistaken, then you want to assume it belongs to the Baal Sholach. Right? Because the bird as a medada could never, and we know it's a medada, the Chacham say it can never go beyond 50 amen. If on the other hand, the mistake is not in the act of medida, in that measurement, but rather the mistake is in the bird, we identified the bird based on its appearance and identified it as what? As a medada, we made a big boo-boo. It's really not a medada. Our measurement is precise. It left the 50 amma. The Shir Chacham is therefore had to come as a mafriya from the world out there, and therefore we have to give it, award it to the motzi. He can keep it. So that's the suffix, whether it belongs to the Baal Shovach or it belongs to the motzi. And that was the suffix of Rav Yirmiyah. However, the Chachamim didn't want to accept Rav Yirmiyah. They didn't want to accept the logic of Rav Yirmiyah. They had a whole longness because the motzi has to have two arguments on his behalf. Okay? And based on the fact that he needs the two arguments, they didn't want to accept the possibility that he could win with his claim. Alright?